We turn now to the military confrontation between Israel and Hamas in the Gaza Strip, and the situation there is really changing hour by hour. So we are joined live by Jim Muir, BBC Middle East correspondent, who's in Beirut, where the question this morning is, with the some evidence of rockets crossing the border into northern Israel, is Hezbollah and the situation in Lebanon a sign of restraint or a sign that things are about to blow in the north? Jim Muir?
I would say that so far the signs are actually quite reassuring. There was an incident in the early morning local time here when probably three rockets were fired across the border from just inside Lebanon. And of course, this immediately raised fears. It caused some degree of panic in northern Israel because, of course, it raised memories of the 2006 war when thousands of Hezbollah rockets were fired across the border. So people thought this might be the precursor. But it turns out that they were certainly or almost certainly fired by some unknown group, possibly the PFLP-GC, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine General Command, which is headed by Ahmed Jibril, who had threatened to open up other fronts against Israel if the Gaza fighting went on. Now, that's a small Palestinian group. It's got nothing much to do with Hezbollah. Hezbollah has made it clear that it did not fire those rockets and has no interest in stirring up trouble on the northern border. The Lebanese government has reiterated its commitment to Resolution 1701 and to keeping things quiet. The Lebanese army is trying to find out who did fire those rockets. Now, Israel did fire back, but in a very limited way. It fired probably half a dozen mortar rounds across into that very area where the rockets had come from. It did not escalate the situation. It was a very pinpoint response, very restrained. And so far, the signs are that both sides, both Hezbollah and Israel, are not spoiling for a fight on the Lebanese border.
Although the rhetoric seems to be bellicose, at least on the Hezbollah side, and with all of the Israeli analysts and many people around the world talking about echoes of 2006, where Hezbollah, of course, had a favorable outcome in a brutal war in Lebanon with Israel. Describe, on the one hand, the bellicose rhetoric on the part of Hezbollah and what appears to be a fairly responsible and delicate dance of restraint on both sides.
That's right. There is a level of shall we say, posturing on both sides, actually. I mean, Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, has made a lot of statement saying we are ready for you. If you attack us, we will give you a worse time than we gave you in 2006 and so on. But he has not given any hint that they would initiate things, that they're looking for a fight. They're saying if a fight is imposed on us, we will defend ourselves and we will give a good account. On the Israeli side, likewise, they've said if Hezbollah does something, we are ready and we're ready for all possibilities. So both sides are saying we can do it, but the signs are that neither wants to.
Now, there are talks going on in Israel separately between Hamas, Fatah, Palestinian authority leaders, and Hamas leaders, and the diplomacy is certainly on the table at this point. It seems to me 13 days into this conflict, though, Jim, that the real story is this sense of restraint. Let's focus on the West Bank for a moment. You would have thought in the past that a prolonged conflict like this with the kinds of pictures that are coming out would have provoked a new intifada or a new sort of sense of more or less unbridled unrest in the occupied territories. Why has the West Bank been so quiet?
Well, funnily enough, I was just talking last night to somebody who'd come from the West Bank and been kind of researching that very question. At the beginning, don't forget, Hamas basically fought Fatah, the other big Palestinian organization which dominates the Palestinian Authority, certainly in the West Bank. They fought them in Gaza and they threw them out, and it was very bloody and very internecine. So when this thing started up, a lot of people in the West Bank who are Fatah sympathizers basically quietly thought to themselves, great, you know, the guys who gave us a bad time are having a bad time too. As it has gone on, their feelings have changed. It's not so one of this is a thing against Hamas, it is this is a thing against the Palestinians and everybody is suffering. So there is a quite strong feeling growing, but you haven't seen this kind of really out of control raging anger for, I think, those reasons. They had very mixed feelings at the beginning, and it's taken time for their kind of Palestinian nationalistic feelings, if you like, or their feelings of solidarity with the ordinary people who are being hurt and killed and having their lives turned upside down in Gaza, for those feelings to come to the fore.
So aside from what Arab leaders are saying about this raising the profile of Hamas, I mean, if this quiets down quickly, it does appear as though one of the consequences is going to be a reveal of the isolation of Hamas in the Palestinian national movement, not a raising of its profile.
I think it's really too early to say. It depends really on the exact balance of power as reflected in any truce or ceasefire that comes out. In a general way, Hamas, I think, has been politically boosted by this because that's what happens. People rally round when they come under attack from outside. So in a general way, that's the case. But if they are obliged to accept conditions that imply that they've kind of lost or that they've been weakened in some way, then they will come out of it badly. On the other hand, as I say, if they come out of it with a solid agreement to open up Gaza, to open up the crossings that would stabilize the situation and lead to a better life for people, they may be given credit for that. So I think we'll have to look very carefully at the formula that comes out of all this diplomacy to kind of gauge how it's going to rebound on the various players, including Hamas.
Well, a delicate moment both diplomatically and militarily, and the Arab world is very much watching to see what happens next. From Beirut, Jim Muir joins us there from the BBC. He's the Middle East correspondent based in Beirut. Thank you, Jim.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.